Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth. BFFT. Live from the home studios presented by High Caliber Millwrights, here's John Canzano with the bald-faced truth.
I love talking with Nick Aliotti. I love picking his brain. I love the fact that he's an expert in a lot of different things, not just football. He's an expert dad. He's an expert Italian. He's the expert son of an Italian mother. There's expertise in that. Nick Aliotti, Pac-12 Network, former Oregon defensive coordinator, father, husband, Italian-American, grandfather joining us now. What was it like to grow up in an Italian household?
Oh, I would have to say, John, I was very lucky, very fortunate. I grew up in an Italian household where there was plenty of love and always plenty of food and always plenty of laughter. And those three things, I think, have served me well along my path as I get older here and have become a dad and a grandparent myself.
My wife was impressed with me because I could make cannelloni, I could make manicotti, I could make a gnocchi, I could make an Italian sauce, but my grandmother did that for me. Like, she took me aside at 10, 12 years old and said, hey, Giovanni, here's how you make the sauce. It's a pinch of this, it's a pinch. Did you get that lesson in a kitchen somewhere as a kid?
Absolutely, particularly from my mom, though. My grandparents, John, really didn't speak English. They spoke Italian and slang Italian at that because they're Sicilian. And so I learned a little bit and could understand them, but for the most part, the conversations a lot of time were fragmented. But getting back to the cooking thing, oh, yeah, I could do my mom's spaghetti sauce. And, what you grow up on is what you think is the best ever. And my mom's sauce is the best ever. So I wanted to duplicate that recipe as best I can. So I guess I'll say I make the best spaghetti sauce for me. I love it.
Now, do the Aliotti children, your children, can they make the sauce? Have you passed that on?
You know, I think they both can. I'd be saying I don't know for sure because we've never gone over their house for the spaghetti sauce. But I know my son is very interested and has called my mom, his grandmother, a number of times for the recipe, recipe and recipes of various Italian dishes to see if he can get close to that expertise. You know, you grew up on your mom's cooking and or your grandparents' cooking, and it's the best you've ever tasted. You go to a restaurant, an Italian restaurant, and it can be good, but there's nothing like the Italian food that you grew up on and had at home. So my mom's spaghetti sauce is still the best I've ever had.
You grow up in northeast of San Francisco, for people who don't know, Pittsburgh, California. Your dad worked at U.S. Steel. That's interesting. My grandfather worked in a mill and a foundry. Like I remember him, I'd sit around and listen to stories, hardworking blue-collar people. And I think that was true of a lot of immigrant families where the kids came and they had work ethic, didn't they?
Absolutely. My dad taught me that from day one. My dad, and I brag about my dad, worked in a steel mill, you know, when they used to have the three shifts, days, swing, and graveyard. And every 2 weeks he would switch off on which shift he worked. And then when he worked the day shift, he would also come home, drive a chlorine truck, and deliver chlorine to the various pools around the East Bay. And then at night, he would either umpire baseball games or officiate basketball games. And then on the weekends, he would work in a gas station when they actually had a gas attendant that fixed your car, changed the oil, tires, all that kind of stuff. So I got a good idea of what it was like to do work and be a hard worker from my dad, because he was working three or four jobs. And I have the utmost respect for him raising five kids on the salary that he made. He made it work. And like I said at the opening, plenty of lot of love, clean clothes, and always plenty of food and laughter.
I can remember my grandparents playing Pinochle. It was always cards with their Italian friends. Did Dad play cards?
Pinochle, Pedro, yes. Those are two Italian. Well, Pinochle is maybe not an Italian card, but Pedro is. My dad and my grandparents would oftentimes, after dinner, play cards. And we would watch until we learned. And then when we got... Well, half of the time I didn't understand Pinochle when I was younger. It's a very complex game, but I do know how to play it, and I play it now with some of my buddies.
Nick Aliotti with us, former Oregon defensive coordinator. I had Rick Neuheisel on the show a few weeks ago, and he said it was one of the great travesties in college football coaching in the Pac-12 that Nick Aliotti never got to be a head coach. I know you embraced the role as a D coordinator. But was there some part of you that still feels like, man, I didn't get to coach, or is that for other people or another day?
No, I have to admit I missed out on being a head football coach. And that's something I would have loved to do, to put my own stamp on my program. I think it would have been fun to hire my staff, particularly after about 20 years of being in it. Yeah. Knowing a lot of guys that I thought were good coaches, good recruiters, great guys. I think I would have really enjoyed putting my group together, see what we could have done. And I had a couple opportunities, and at the time I didn't think they felt right for me. And I didn't take those, take that leap to become a head coach. They were smaller programs. San Jose State is one about 20-something years ago. And I wish I would have done that. But I chose not to. The San Jose State head job came along when I had just gotten into the NFL, and it was just going to be my second season, and I didn't feel like the timing was right. But looking back, I would have loved that opportunity, and it's the one thing that I say, I won't say I regret, because I felt fulfilled in my career. I thought it was a good career, not bragging, but I'm very satisfied in what we got done at Oregon in particular, and coaching and all the things, and the bowl games and all that kind of stuff. But I did miss out and would have loved the opportunity to be a head football coach.
You know how that goes, though. You had gone to San Jose State, and let's be real, I grew up around that program. It wasn't well-supported. I'll be nice about that. It wasn't well-supported. You didn't have a lot of resources there. It would have been a tough job. I have no doubt you would have won there, but you might have looked back and said, I never should have taken this job. I should have stayed happy as an assistant coach forever.
I'm sorry, Johnny. You have a point there, because, people think, and San Jose at the time was exactly what you're talking about, and it still kind of is, really.
Yeah.
I went over there, and I couldn't believe the – no support, no finances, no facilities. It would have been a tough job. But if you want that opportunity sometimes, you have to take one of those kinds of jobs. It would have been nice to have been the head football coach at Oregon after spending a lot of years there, because I knew a lot what was going on, understood the recruiting, understood the climate, understood the league, those kinds of things. But it never happened. And I don't look back with, great regret or remorse or anything like that. It just would have been nice to do the things we talked about earlier with my staff and the ideas that I think I had, and see how far we could have gotten.
Nick Aliotti with us, former Oregon defensive coordinator. 2013 Alamo Bowl, you decide, hey, this is it. I'm going to retire from college coaching. And I remember seeing you on the field after the game, and I gave you a hug after the game and said, it's been an honor to kind of be around you. And how did you know that was the right time? Why then?
Catherine and I, my wife, had talked about 60. At 60, because that was the age I retired, if we could afford to walk away and have a life where her and I could spend more time, you know, our kids were getting older, with our kids, with our grandkids to come, to travel. You don't know what's on the other side of 60. Not to sound remorse or you know, that the world's coming to an end, but you don't know how much more you have after 60. You know, kind of after 60, you're in the fourth quarter of life. And I wanted that fourth quarter to be special. My wife had sacrificed quite a bit. She was the mom and dad while I was coaching. My wife was an elementary school teacher and gave that up so that I could continue to be a college football coach at the highest level while she raised the kids. And I missed a lot of things. I didn't miss anything that I could actually attend, but I had to miss a lot of things because of my job. So we had talked at 60, we were going to have at least 20 good years, knock on wood, of a life where we could do the things that we never had a chance to do and enjoy those kinds of things. And so we had those conversations. So when 60 came, it was easy to do.
Nick Aliotti is with us. There's been some talk about the college games in September possibly not having fans in the stadium. I've asked players about that. But from a coaching standpoint, you've coached scrimmages where it's just your program. You've seen game day. There's a different electricity on game day. Do you think something gets lost if the fans are not at Autzen Stadium?
Absolutely. I mean, I hate to say that because as a coach, once the game starts, you don't notice any of that stuff, really. You're into the game. Same with the players. But I think you do lose a lot without the fans, particularly in Autzen Stadium, where you have sellouts almost every game, or at least, you know, pretty close to a sellout. The enthusiasm that those fans bring, they're a knowledgeable group for the most part. They love their Ducks. I think that you lose quite a bit without the fans. And let's face it, you know, the athletic department, they're going to lose quite a bit of revenue if there's not fans in their stadiums, because that's how they pay the bill. So it'll be different. Having said that, though, I sure hope there is football some way, shape, or form. If it's safe and we could do it the right way, I hope there's football, because I love it. I have a passion for the game. And I can't imagine a fall without football season.
The position group that you think benefits most from having a full, you know, camp, a full opportunity to run up to the season, I immediately go to quarterbacks and receivers, but what am I missing? What do you need to get ready besides physical conditioning? What position group needs the most time?
Well, you know, it's interesting you say quarterbacks are receiving, and I understand that from a timing standpoint, John. I do. But I think the two groups that need the most time, and a quarterback, obviously, because he's the general field general out there, but the two groups are the secondary and the offensive line, because those two groups must work. It's four moving parts that must work hand in hand, synchronized, in the run game and pass game for an offensive line, and there's a tremendous amount of communication and recognition of fronts with the stemming and the blitzes and all that. And then the secondary, with everything that goes on in the back end and formations and motions, those guys have to be on the same page. There's a lot that goes on with those two position groups. So the mental work and the reps for an offensive line and a defensive secondary, to me, those groups are the two most critical as far as having time spent together so they can get it right.
There was the perception there towards the end of your time at Oregon that Oregon was getting better athletes. You know, you got a DeAnthony Thomas in the program, and it's, you know, you started to see some guys that could fly. Did you always have good athletes, or did you see that? And where were those acceleration points where you looked around and went, hey, man, we're in new living rooms now as you recruited?
Yeah, when I first started, you know, it was a 32,000 seat stadium and all those nice facilities outside of that stadium now, which is a beautiful stadium. There was nothing there. It was a parking lot. So we had to oftentimes, and I think it helped me along the way. And the question you asked, I think we got a lot of three-star players and two-star players, and we just had to get the right kind of guy. Once you get the right kind of guy, meaning the two- or three-star guy that knows how to work, is intelligent, is good off the field, goes to class, you build a culture, and then you can get a better guy and a better talented guy because you have a bunch of good guys in your program that show them the way. But, yes, obviously, I would say the last 8 to 10 years as a coach at Oregon, we definitely had a chance to get in some better homes and recruit 4- and 5-star guys. But it's not the 4- and 5-star guys, in my opinion. Evaluation is so key. It's not the 4- and 5-star guys that always make it in your program and always make your program great. It's the guys that you, when you recruit them, I should say, it's the guys that become 4- and 5-star guys because of their makeup, their character, their work ethic. Those are the guys that really make your program strong. The guys that are the true workers, character guys that get it. And when you have a bunch of those guys, then you have a great program.
I remember talking with Mike Bellotti about TJ Ward as a guy that he was really proud of, that sort of developed and became an NFL player, obviously. Do you have a guy like that that pops to mind that you say, that guy just worked, he made everything out of his God-given talent, and look where it took him? Is there an example that you think of?
Yeah, there's a few, but the one that comes to my mind first and foremost is Kevin Mitchell. Kevin Mitchell, the little mini linebacker who might have been 5'10", 200 pounds, 210. You probably remember Kevin Mitchell,
yep.
John.
Yeah.
Anyway, he was a linebacker, undersized linebacker, that worked so hard and was so smart, worked in the weight room and in the classroom as far as meetings and film study, that before the play was snapped, Kevin Mitchell pretty much knew what the play was going to be because he made himself into a great football player, and he became like a coach on the field. And those are the kinds of guys I'm talking about that give you a chance to have a great program and particularly a great defense. So Kevin Mitchell comes to mind right away. But there was a bunch of them.
I remember with him, it was like maybe his sophomore year, he made a bunch of tackles. He kind of got maybe an honorable mention for all conference, and everyone was like, okay, that's it. And he just kept getting better and better and better. And like by 2-3 years later, he's making a bunch of tackles in the backfield. And you look at his numbers at the end, and he's sixth all time in career tackles at Oregon. All time.
Yeah. On Friday nights, you'll get this, and maybe some of the listeners will. You know, they used to have that Saturday night skit about who would you take, the so-and-so Army or Ditka, and those three guys that were drinking beer and eating brats and go, Ditka. Well, on Friday nights, I would used to do that with Kevin Mitchell and do a little skit before we met with the whole defense about who would you take, you know, the whole UCLA offense or Mitch, and then they would all say, Mitch, you know. We would do that little thing with Kevin Mitchell. That was that kind of guy.
Coach, I wish you the best. I know that Mother's Day in a lot of families is a big deal. Certainly in your household, you guys will celebrate some Mother's Day. You got any big plans?
Yeah, we're going to have my son and daughter-in-law come over with the three grandkids because they've been social distancing and quarantining their own family. Besides my wife, Catherine, they're the only other five that I've had contact with as far as in-person contact. And so we're going to get together. We'll have some kind of barbecue. It's supposed to be good weather. Let the kids get out in the backyard and play, ride some bikes. And, we're going to celebrate it that way. It's going to be tough because my mom, who is quarantined. She's 87 now. Is pretty much going to be all by herself, which is tough for us to swallow. But she's doing great, and we'll all call her and FaceTime. So, but that's what we're going to do on Mother's Day.
Do you mind? We had a listener call in who has a question for you, and I always love when people listening think of a question. And do you mind taking one question before you go?
John, I'll do whatever you want. I got nothing but time.
All right. Mark in Beaverton's called in. Mark, get to the point with this. Don't no rambling here, but you got a question for Nick?
Thank you, John. I appreciate it. So, Coach, big fan. If you ever get bored, I'm wondering if you've ever thought of doing narration for Audible.com. I love your voice, the tone, the inflection. Man, you would have me on every word if you did that.
Nick Eliotti reading books. Would you ever, like you got a Morgan Freeman voice there.
I would absolutely do that. Somebody, you know, show me the way. Yes, I would do that. You know, I'm doing some homeschooling right now, Mark. So, and we got the NNN Institute of Higher Learning, the Soaring Eagles, has the three grandkids over every day, and we go from about 9 to 1. So, and we're teaching them everything from math, English, reading, spelling, riding bikes. When we clear things up, swimming lessons, the whole 9 yards.
I love that.
I'd be interested. Yes.
I love. How about children's books with Coach Eliotti? We could all have a whole series, whole nother career.
Yeah, love I'm gonna read all the places we can go, or what's the title of that book?
I love it.
I would love to read that book.
Oh, The Places We Will Go by Coach Nick Eliotti. I love it. I love that you're on the other side of 60 and you're making it count. So I appreciate you, Coach. Thanks for making time and have a great weekend.
Thank you, John. Stay safe. Have a great day.
Nick Eliotti, former Oregon defensive coordinator. Fantastic stuff with him always. Leave it here. My wife will pop in studio coming up. Plus, I want to talk to you about a couple of things that are going on in the world as it relates to us getting back to life. Free beer. Did you know how to get free beer? I'll tell you coming up. So one of the byproducts of restaurants and bars not being opened is apparently that there are a lot of kegs of beer that are sitting around that are going to have to be dumped. Rusty Truck Brewing had an option. They could dump the beer, but a story on Oregon Live that caught my eye, Brian Whitehead, who is the person in charge there, doesn't want his beer to go bad, but he can't sell it right now, so he's choosing the only other option he sees besides dumping it down the drain. He is the owner and founder of Rusty Truck Brewing. He is going to fill up a couple of growlers worth of beer for anybody who wants some. It's in Lincoln City. That's the catch. You got to go to Lincoln City, but this giveaway will be at their tap room. You can go by their tap room. He'll have a beer truck out there or other tapping equipment. You have to be 6 feet away, but he's basically saying, look, we got a bunch of beer. We don't know what to do with it, and he doesn't want to waste it. And he was raised partially by a grandmother who grew up in the Depression and saved everything. He says, I think she'd roll over in the grave if I was dumping beer down the drain. So good on him. If you are within a shout of Lincoln City, that giveaway going on today just started at 2 p.m., and it goes till 7 p.m. Alabama Adriana. Do you want to get Rusty Truck? You want to call Rusty Truck Brewing in Lincoln City right now and get them on the phone?
Sure.
Rusty Truck Brewing. See if you can get the owner on the phone, Brian Whitehead. He doesn't want his beer to go bad. I want to pop him on just real quick. I won't keep him long. I know he's busy. You know, he's pouring beer and such. But let's try to get Brian Whitehead on the show. Let's see how good we are. My wife's going to pop in studio. We're going to try to get the guy who's pouring the beer, giving it away. I'm going to give him a fist bump and a shout out, let him promote his giveaway. But they're in Lincoln City and they're giving away beer until 7 o'clock tonight. He's probably busy pouring beer. But let's see if he just wants to pop on the show.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Baltimore.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but If you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.